Back in the spring of 2019, Democratic state lawmakers and Governor Andrew Cuomo put language in the state budget that required police departments around New York to document demographic information about incidents where force was used or threatened by police officers, which would then be collected by the state and compiled into annual reports. After nearly 2 years of collecting data and some prodding from yours truly, the state has finally released some of the data it has amassed. To discuss the findings and this collection process more broadly, we're joined by Michael Sizitsky, a senior policy counsel with the New York Civil Liberties Union. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Happy to be here.
So I want to get to the data that's been collected, but first I want to discuss the point of doing this at all and what was collected. So can you explain what information the state wanted and how, at least theoretically, it could be useful to future policing policies?
Sure. So back in 2019, the state legislature, as part of the budget that was passed that year, mandated for the first time that there be uniform statewide collection and reporting on incidents when law enforcement officers engage in use of force. So prior to that, there were kind of this random assortment of individual localities that had mandates for data collection and reporting, but by no means uniform, and by no means could the public expect to easily find information on the number of times that an officer fires a gun or uses a chokehold. And oftentimes what people would have to do would be to submit public records requests to police departments to try to force disclosure of that information, which was always a daunting task, could involve potentially years of litigation, and was this really unnecessary and far too high barrier to getting the public information on one of the most serious actions that a public official could take, in this case, a police officer using force against a member of the public. So this was the first time that the state put forward a plan for making this information more readily accessible, more transparent, and allow for some measure to compare one locality to another and see what police use of force looks like across New York State. So the legislation that they put forward was that first step. We would get information on instances where police officers brandish, use, or fire a weapon, including guns, including tasers, including impact weapons like batons. We would get information on when police use chokeholds or other restraints, on when they're displaying or deploying pepper spray or other chemical agents. And we would get information on cases where there is a serious bodily injury that results from an officer's use of force, and critically, cases where people are killed by police during an encounter. Prior to this law taking effect, we didn't have that basic information on just the numbers of people who were killed by law enforcement across the state. And the last kind of really critical piece that was in this legislation was mandated collection reporting on the demographics of people who are subject to use of force, as well as the officers that are using force, so we can get a full picture on what police use of force looks like in communities of color, to, you know, kind of shine light on what we've kind of known and suspected all along, which is that police use of force disproportionately targets communities of color. Which is what we've seen from this reporting so far.
Yeah, I'd like to pivot to that. What does this data tell us about use of force against people of color? Are the rates disproportionately higher than incidents involving white civilians?
They are disproportionately higher. So from this preliminary data, and I should also note that one of the limitations in the report was that it looks like there are still some police agencies across the state that haven't submitted data to DCJS, and some agencies like NYPD that haven't submitted the full universe of their use of force practices. But from the data that's in this first report, we can see that 49% of the use of force incidents reported on involved force being used against Black New Yorkers. And that is a rate that is far higher than the proportion that Black New Yorkers make up in New York State. It's around 18%. So this is, you know, another example of what we see kind of across police practices, which is that law enforcement overwhelmingly is targeting Black New Yorkers for enforcement, and in this case for using force, at rates that are far out of proportion to their population in the state.
So it's out of proportion with their population of the state. Does that mean it's out of proportion with what is warranted, though? Is there a possibility that the crimes or the incidents that merit force are disproportionately involving civilians of color?
I think there's not a lot to go on from the level of detail in the reporting to actually make the call on where these are cases of excessive force, or there's kind of some general kind of framing on what the circumstances are that lead to force being used in this report, some broad categories that law enforcement are reporting on as the circumstances leading to those encounters escalating. And critically, what this report doesn't actually tell us is any information on whether use of force incidents were investigated and whether individual instances were found to be within policy or unjustified. But I think what we know from looking at so many other police practices is that there's still aggressive targeting of communities of color that don't actually result in convictions. Say, for if you look at, for example, New York City stop and frisk numbers, Black and brown people are stopped at rates far out of proportion to their population and are also overwhelmingly leave those encounters not being arrested or charged with any crime. So we see these practices, are still falling on Black and brown communities without sufficient justification in a number of contexts. So I wouldn't be surprised if many of these instances of force documented here are cases of excessive force, but the data in this report just doesn't give us enough to go on to make those determinations based on this initial batch of data.
In case you're just joining us, this is the Capitol Press Room, and we're analyzing state-compiled use of force data from local police departments all over New York. And our guest is Michael Sizitsky, a senior policy counsel with the New York Civil Liberties Union. That issue you've highlighted about not knowing whether a use of force is justified in the end run, is that a failure of the data that's been submitted, or is that a failure of the law back in 2019 in terms of what it asked for?
I think, the law in 2019 is an important starting point, but it is, it's limited. It provides a really helpful picture on just raw numbers of what these encounters look like, on how many are taking place, what the impact is on specific communities. But it's a starting point. And I think what could be a valuable use of this data is for communities to then go and see how many incidents are happening in a given locality and press their local officials to see what is being done in response. So much of what we do to hold police accountable is dependent on local officials, local leaders, police chiefs, police commissioners, mayors, county executives, who hold so much power over investigating and responding to incidents of police misconduct. So having this baseline data, seeing what use of force looks like in Rochester, in New York City, in Syracuse, in Albany, will give people in those communities a starting point to then approach officials there and ask them, demand to know what is actually happening to investigate these cases, put the onus on them to justify whether these uses of force were in fact justified, whether they were investigated, and crucially, if they were investigated and found to be outside department policies or not justified in law, what was actually done, if anything, to hold those officers accountable.
Were you able to glean any larger trends about what leads to force being used? I know there's those categories you talked about that say, this was initiated because of, say, suspicious activity, or there was a report of a crime, for example. Is there anything that you can suss out from all of that, or is it too difficult to make sense of that kind of information?
I think it's hard to tell from this report itself, you know, they use some broad categories
right.
Of incidents, like response to unlawful or suspicious activity was the most frequently reported one, with I think about 22% of use of force incidents falling within that category. You have follow-up investigation at 21%. That doesn't tell you a whole lot about what the specific circumstances are. What did kind of stand out was there were 8% of use of force incidents that arose in connection to a medical, mental health, or welfare assistance call. So that shows that's at least a somewhat more nuanced description that shows a relatively high and concerning number of use of force incidents in response to someone with a mental health issue. We saw 16% with traffic stops. So it gives us kind of broad strokes of the encounters where these incidents are occurring, but not more kind of granular data. And I think that's where a lot of follow-up can be done on the individual locality level to then push local councils, local police departments to fill in some of the gaps in this data.
And this first tranche of data represents about a 15-plus month period, July through the end of October of 2020. What would you like to see in terms of a reporting period moving forward? Would you just like to see maybe calendar year reports?
I think calendar year are helpful. You know, the more frequent reporting, the better, to get a sense of you know, month by month or quarter by quarter, to track these events in closer to real time. But now that this is a standardized reporting practice, I think we can at least expect to see these come up annually and give us, you know, a much greater insight into what these encounters look like than we've ever had before.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our discussion about the new use of force data by police departments in New York with our guest, Michael Sizitsky, a senior policy counsel with the New York Civil Liberties Union.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're continuing our discussion about recently released use of force data by police departments that was compiled by the state. And our guest is Michael Sizitsky, a senior policy counsel with the New York Civil Liberties Union. Before the break, you mentioned some of the shortcomings of the data collected that are based on just a lack of information entered by some of these departments, in particular the New York City Police Department, which didn't submit all the information that was requested. Can you explain some of the gaps in their reporting and quantify what this means for the usefulness of this data?
So the NYPD, according to this report, they only included use of force incidents that involved firearm use or discharge, the use or deployment of chemical agents, electronic control weapons, so things like tasers and impact weapons. They didn't include any reporting on uses of chokeholds or similar restraints, or any reporting on conduct that resulted in serious bodily injury or death. And when you look at a police force that is the size of the NYPD, it's unparalleled, certainly in New York State, but also it's the largest police force in the nation, if not the world. So to leave out entire categories of reporting from these incidents is substantially narrowing the universe of what the full picture of use of force looks like in New York State. I think we could expect far more rich data, far more incidents being reported, had the NYPD actually fulfilled their legal mandate and transmitted this information to the state. It's surprising, if only because the NYPD already does collect information on use of force locally and reports a lot of that information out on their own website. So it's not clear why they would leave out such necessary information in this state report. There are also kind of limitations, and this goes back to the reporting on categories and reasons for encounters. This is all, you know, being self-reported by law enforcement agencies. So if they want to report information on use of force as, you know, falling into the categories of response to unlawful or suspicious activity, they're the ones making those calls. And I think one thing that kind of stood out, at least to me, was the category that they that some agencies reported on as use of force occurring during a demonstration. And it's not clear to me, are they categorizing that demonstration field to be response to or use of force that occurred during protests and demonstrations, like what we saw last summer in the wake of George Floyd's murder, in which case there were only 18 demonstration related use of force incidents in this report, which doesn't seem to be the actual number that New Yorkers saw last year. So a lot of this is dependent on police departments accurately and voluntarily committing to the greatest degree of transparency and nuance in sending this information into the State Division of Criminal Justice Services.
When the state began collecting this data back in the summer of 2019, I remember talking with law enforcement representatives who maintained there was a lot of ambiguity in the reporting requirements with regards to what certain terms meant, like brandish or display. Since then, the state came out with explicit definitions in January of 2020, but tweaked them later in the year. Does all of that undermine the usefulness of this first tranche of data?
I think it makes it a bit more challenging to analyze consistently. There are different definitions that are used in different data sets within the same report. So there are some categories where we'll see firearm be reported, where it combines kind of all potential firearm-related incidents. So just unholstering a weapon could be included in the same field as actually firing one. Mm-hmm. So it makes it more challenging to get a truly accurate and nuanced picture of those differences in this initial report. But hopefully with more clear guidance from the agency going forward, we'll be able to draw those distinctions more clearly in future reports that we see. But it does kind of limit the utility of this initial batch.
Well, looking at the data, I noticed that the Rochester Police Department didn't file a use of force incident involving their interaction with Daniel Prude in March of 2020. He wasn't shot, and you know, I'm not aware of weapons being used against him, but a bag was placed over his head and he died a week after the interaction. Is there something about this incident that makes you think it should have been reported, or does the fact that a deadly encounter might not need to have been reported highlight other shortcomings of this project?
I think it's something that calls for, you know, taking a look back at the initial language to make sure that we are fully capturing all use of force incidents and not kind of leaving any wiggle room for police departments to evade reporting mandates. And I think one thing that has happened since the use of force reporting provision was passed in 2019 was another measure that passed through the state legislature in the summer of 2020. That has a broader reporting requirement for incidents that involve police killing members of the public that is less tied to some of the specific categories of use of force here. So maybe we can see some of those cases that are falling through the cracks in this initial use of force reporting be captured by that other provision of state law that's going to take effect. But it does, you know, this is clearly a case where someone was killed by police. And it should be reported as a use of force. And to the extent that police agencies are not including the full universe of those encounters in this data, we need to hold them accountable to their requirement to do so, but also look for ways to make sure that, you know, we're not leaving any gray area or room for interpretation here.
Related to all this use of force reporting is legislation introduced earlier this year by State Attorney General Letitia James, which would change the state standards for when force can be used by law enforcement. Can you walk us through the ramifications of that measure, which, at least for the past legislative session, didn't really get any momentum?
Sure. So towards the end of the session, the Attorney General, together with Senator Parker and Assemblymember Perry, introduced legislation that would put sharper limits on police ability to use force, and in particular, deadly force, under existing law. So New York law currently allows police to use force when necessary, but doesn't give a ton of context to what necessary actually means. So it's not clear, for instance, that use of force should be a last resort, as opposed to something that police can do without exhausting other alternatives or lesser means of force. So the legislation that the Attorney General worked to introduce and that the NYCLU is supportive of would clarify those standards and tighten them, make clear that force can only be considered necessary if it actually is the last resort, if there are no reasonable alternatives to accomplish a legitimate law enforcement objective. So have they looked at de-escalation? Have they tried de-escalation? Have they tried other tactics to resolve the situation that don't involve pulling out a gun or a taser or other weapon? So it's hopefully going to be a way to make sure that we are driving down the total number of these incidents that ultimately will get reported on in future releases of this data.
Is it premature to talk about changing these standards when we don't yet have good data on how and when use of force is currently being used?
I don't think it's premature at all. And I think, we saw the results of New York's current use of force standards last summer. We've seen it for years in the policing of Black and Brown communities. But last summer in particular, we saw overwhelming levels of police violence being directed at members of the public. We've seen very little accountability since then. And these are incidents of officers driving their cars into crowds of protesters, violently shoving people to the ground without any provocation, indiscriminately pepper spraying New Yorkers. And so many of those incidents could arguably be covered under existing law, or police are certainly arguing that they are allowed to use that level of force under existing law. Whether they're right or wrong, I don't think they are actually justified, but it points to needing to make sure that we are limiting opportunities for police to claim legal cover for using excessive force against members of the public. So we've seen that existing law kind of empowers officers to escalate encounters and to not kind of run through the full set of tools that they have available to them to de-escalate. So we should be imposing sharper restrictions on that force, making sure that they are actually stopping to think whether force is actually necessary in encounters, and making it so that we are less likely to see these extreme cases of violence that we've become far too accustomed to.
Well, we've been speaking with Michael Sizitsky. He's a senior policy counsel with the New York Civil Liberties Union. Michael, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you.
And for a copy of the state report, as well as a link to the raw data itself, check out the post we wrote about it recently at capitalpressroom.org.
Support for the Capital Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.